Welcome to Modern Sign Books on Blog Talk Radio. If you're interested in what makes your favorite authors and collectors tick, then you'll love hearing what they have to say in our live interviews. Learn how they got started writing, the books and authors that inspired them, what they have in their personal collections, and much more. Meet today's hottest authors as they discuss their life and writing in revealing conversations with our book specialist, Roger Nichols. And find us at modernsignbooks.blogspot.com. Now sit back and enjoy a few minutes with Modern Sign Books. Here's Roger.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Roger Nichols. Today, we welcome Glenn Eric Hamilton. He's originally from the Seattle area, so he gets extra bonus points for that. And he writes that he grew up aboard a sailboat, spent his youth finding trouble around the marinas and commercial docks and islands of the Pacific Northwest. Now, he says he lives in California with his family, punctuated by, as he puts it, frequent visits to his hometown to soak up the rain. His first novel, Past Crimes, came out just a year ago to both popular and critical acclaim. It featured Van Schott, Army Ranger, who had just returned home to Seattle after 10 years. When his grandfather shot and left for dead, Shaw finds himself pulled back into his grandfather's criminal culture with explosive results. J.A. Jantz called it as much fun to read as Lee Child's Jack Reacher, and Lee Child himself, in turn, called it a home run off the first pitch. And now, his second Van Schott book, Hard Cold Winter, is just out. It ramps up the action to a new level. It is a first-class page-turner, and this reader, for one, devoured it with glee. We're very pleased to welcome an author you're going to be hearing a lot about in the future, Glenn Eric Hamilton.
Hi, good morning, Roger.
Good morning. What a delight to talk with you. I love the fact that you're from the Northwest, for those of us who are blessed enough to have lived here, even though you are living in California now, but we understand.
Yes, it's seen as a betrayal, I know.
I know, but it's a career move, too, I suspect. Also, boy, this is just so much fun. So many aspects that I want to go through with you about this. One of the things that you said about the first book in an interview was that part of the book's theme is learning which parts of your past to embrace and which to reject. What would you say the theme of this book is?
Well, with the new book, it's funny. Theme is the sort of thing where I don't set out when I start to write a book with the theme in mind. I count on the little subconscious gremlins to fill that in as I go. And then generally around the time I'm doing rewrites, I figure out, this is what I'm talking about in the book. This is what's going on with the characters and what I'm really writing about. And so if the first one was really about determining which parts of your past to deal with and determining perhaps which parts of yourself and others to forgive, I feel like the second one really centers on the question of trust. Mm-hmm. Trust in those around you, how much you're able to give them, how much trust you have in yourself. And if you're not able to trust, what are you surrendering by doing that? What are you giving up?
Yeah. Yeah, and I should mention that we're talking about how cool the first book was, and your Edgar nominee for that, and Best First Novel. This is good stuff. I mean, really, really good stuff. And pardon me if I get over-enthusiastic, but I feel like I'm at the start of something really cool and big. So you just stay healthy and keep writing, okay?
Thank you. That's certainly my intent.
All right. One of the things I want to mention really, really early on is your webpage, glennerickhamilton.com. And I just had fun surfing that, too. And I want to go into a little bit about your background on that, because I love the article you wrote for The Strand and John D. MacDonald, and huge Travis McGee fan. And when I started to read the article, the first thing I thought was, because you mentioned you grew up on ships, was that quote from Turquoise Lament. And by God, three paragraphs later, there it is, about how he has to work 2 hours every day as the fee for living aboard the Busted Flush. So I think we're fairly...
It's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. You know, my wife is from Kansas, and as those who perhaps have grown up in the heartland might, looks at sailing and ships and boats as with a fairly romantic eye, and I think that's perfectly understandable. But plenty of those of us who have lived on boats still see them with a romantic eye. Having grown up aboard, I do not. I look at them as floating chores, basically, just because of all of the work that it takes to keep a boat afloat and sparkling and all of the things that you want it to be. That said, I had some tremendously fun times growing up aboard and sailing with my family.
I think that that informs your writing to a great deal in the background in ways you probably don't even suspect. But it certainly feels like you know what you're talking about when you're writing about the Seattle area and the docks and the marinas.
Good, good. It certainly is a rich part of my history, but it's a rich part of Seattle's history as well. You know, everywhere you go in Seattle, there's water. You know, there's bridges. There's traffic caused by water and bridges. You know, so it's inescapable. Even if you never set foot on a boat, water is a part of your life. And when it's not, you know, getting in the way of your morning commute, it's coming down from the sky.
Right.
And so it's a big part of what Seattle is.
Well, that reminds me of two quotes I was going to mention to you. One of them is that you talk about, see if I can find it here because I take lots of notes, or the occasional raindrop tapped out on the windshield, too heavy to ignore, too light for even the slowest intermittent setting on the car's windshield wipers, Seattle water torture. That's brilliant.
Yes. Every driver, I think any driver in any place with rain knows that, but certainly in Seattle, there's this drizzle that seems to be set at this maddening pace that's just not enough for a windshield wiper, but too much to drive through.
Yeah.
And it's almost guaranteed to make you turn it on and off once per minute ad infinitum for hours.
Yeah, it is the way it works. Also, you said if you're writing about crime in Seattle, it opens a lot of possibilities. I'd like to explore that a little bit.
Sure. Mostly, again, getting back to geography a little.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle is still one of our major Pacific shipping points, particularly where the Pacific Rim is concerned and Asia and Canada as well. We're close to international borders. We're close to national borders with Canada. As a state, we do a lot of trading in and around, even within the state, over the mountains between the eastern and western parts of the city. When you have that much industrial and economic traffic going around, that's prime for all manner of nefarious doings, and I think that lends itself well. That said, Seattle is not typically known as a high crime city, and never really has been, even during the worst parts of it. If anything, crime is, although it has a lot of blue collar structure in the shipping industry, it's got an awful lot of white collar structure too, with the rise of the tech boom and other industries. So there's sort of a fascinating dynamic between classes of criminals.
Yeah. You mentioned the rise of the tech here, and one of the items said that I think every thriller writer struggles with the ubiquity of cell phones and GPS and other conveniences when trying to get their protagonist into tough situations. If your character is younger and tech savvy as Van is, it's even harder. That's an interesting observation.
Yeah, it's in the second book at the start, as you know, I send him out to the Olympic Peninsula specifically because he's looking for somebody who's out of cell phone range.
Yeah.
Even then, theoretically, the character could be on a satellite phone. So it's almost impossible these days, without something going wrong with our devices, to be out of touch. And that sets up a unique challenge. You know, I watched a movie recently based on one of Lawrence Block's books. I'm a tremendous fan of Lawrence Block's different series. And it was set in 1999. I think specifically so that they would not have to deal with modern technology, because that would have made the detective story a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, the only satellite phones are the size of a brick and are very expensive at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. I used to carry one of those around. I worked for telecommunications at the time, and we were very proud to have our bricks.
So that leads me to ask you, what did you do for the telecommunications?
Sure. One of my undergraduate degrees was in computer science, and that has formed the foundation of my day job for many years. I worked as a programmer and as an application manager for many years, mostly in telecommunications, because as a college student during summers and breaks, I'd worked for the phone company doing directory assistance. This is Glenn, what city? I was that guy for a few months out of the year to help pay for school. And I got to sort of be intrigued by telecommunications and got into that as soon as I could after school, and spent probably the better part of a dozen or 14 years working in and around the mobile phone industry at the time that it was really hitting big.
Wow.
So I have a lot of background in that, and I'll use some of that knowledge a little bit in the books without making them too techie. I don't write tech thrillers, and I'm not terribly interested in writing tech thrillers, so I keep it aimed towards the layperson.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the book, because that's kind of why we're here. I love the background, too. That's fascinating stuff. But in the book, Van's back in Seattle. He's meeting with Will Willard, whose niece, Elena Cole, has gone missing. And Van, close to Elena when they were kids, both were teenage thieves. I love that background. And I love the flashbacks to when he was 17. And somehow that gives a real depth of character to it. And it makes me wonder just how planned out his personality is, because it really seems fully developed.
Mm. It's one of those things where the what I call the interstitial chapters, the flashbacks to Van and to Alana at younger ages, and in the first book too, they feel like short stories to me when I'm writing them. Like I'm looking at Van at particular ages and thinking about, well, what does he get from this? What does he learn? What do we learn about him from these short stories, so that we can have something of a character study? Again, this is where those subconscious gremlins come into play. Mm-hmm. Without really intending to, I find myself echoing that in Van as an adult,
mm-hmm.
and how that viewpoint that he might have had at 14 or 17 has changed radically now that he's older, wiser, and scarred physically and otherwise by his experiences. So to call it planned is probably giving me too much credit, but it certainly helps me understand him better.
Yeah, but it gives us wonderful context for it. And as the story unfolds, and I don't want to give too much away, but this I think will hook him in there. But is that when he finally reaches this remote cabin, he finds and I've never seen this before in any book, a large bear devouring what remains of the guy and the gal shot and killed. Nobody ever else I've ever seen in all of adventure fiction has mentioned what happens with people who die out in the wild and become food source.
They become food source, right. Bears are scavengers. You know, this one has probably just woken up or smelled something good to a bear and says, oh, hey, great, meal, fantastic. You know, it's certainly not anything. I'm not anti-bear by any means. I like animals, but it would make sense that, you know, somebody dies out in the wild and they're left in the open. They get eaten, and potentially they get eaten by the largest thing around.
Right, and again, that sets off a whole chain of events, which just get more and more complicated and more interesting as time goes by as you delve into this stuff. I don't want to get too far into the plot to give away too many plot points, but from there things get interesting, and that's saying something. So I'm really delighted with that.
I always look for, you know, once if you solve one problem, what two others pop up in its place. You know, that's always a good rule for thrillers.
And let me compliment you on the secondary characters here, because they really, really feel real, and including the old his sidekick who comes back. I've lost the name here for a second.
Leo.
Leo, who comes in partway through the book, who comes and to meet his old sergeant and needs some help, and turns out being a great help himself. One of the lines I loved at that point is, he says, it'll do me good to talk to somebody who doesn't think a magazine's what you read at the beauty salon. So,
yeah, it's in interviews with friends who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, some of them special operations, some not. It was important to me to have Van and Leo talk to each other realistically, as young men and soldiers, experienced soldiers, mm-hmm. would do. And their, you know, their They're a bit cynical. They tend to joke through their feelings to a certain extent, but they have a shorthand, and they talk about things. They talk about things openly without necessarily verbalizing them, and that's that's an interesting thing that not just men, but certainly men and men who are soldiers do frequently.
Yeah, and it's a nice line to walk to be able to speak openly, but without spelling everything out. And I think that's tough to do, and you pulled it off very well. Absolutely. One of the also compelling aspects of the book are a different target for theft, and that is in one of the flashbacks, Van and his grandfather go after unusual targets, high-end lenses, some of the smaller ones being valued at $50,000. I have never seen that in a book before, and that makes it even more compelling, I think.
Thank you. I try to come up with things a little out of the average that these thieves might go for, because they are, to a certain extent, analog crooks in a digital world, right? There aren't piles of cash lying around or other things, gold bullion necessarily. In people's saves, you can't just walk into a bank and take out a whole bunch of cash anymore. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Or at least it's awfully difficult to do. So it makes sense to say, well, what are things small enough to be carried which are nonetheless worth a great deal of money that a company might have around and perhaps not be thinking about quite the same way we would as a stack of cash or a gold bar.
Yeah. But there's a dramatic section in there as you go step by step through the robbery there, and kind of a surprise ending on it as well. So I don't know. It just keeps resonating. This is one of those books that I'm probably going to have to read again very, very quickly, because now that I realize there's a ton of stuff there that I probably missed in my race through it. And that there's a tension as a reader when you've got something really, really good and you want to run through it because you have to know what happens next. And yet you
I know that feeling well.
Yeah, and yet you don't want to go too fast because you know there's a lot of rich stuff along the way. So, yeah, it's fabulous stuff.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Now, obviously, you've got a series going here with two books in it featuring Van. But are you going to develop additional characters? Or are you going to roll with this for a while?
Oh, yes and yes. I'm happy to say that a couple of weeks ago, we made an agreement for books, my third and fourth books, I should say, rather than books three and four. I am working on book three right now in the Van Chaw series, which I'm very happy to do because there's a character arc that, I keep coming back to the Gremlins today, but there's a character arc partway through the second book that I realized I was writing that he needs to get to by roughly the end of the third book, and I'm excited to do that. The fourth book, I don't know whether it's going to be a Van Chaw book, and I don't know if it's going to be a standalone. I certainly want there to be more Van Chaw books. Part of the delight of doing a series to me is creating a large cast of characters and having them take bigger or smaller roles depending upon what the plot needs. Willard was a minor character in the first book and is more of a major character in the second book, for example. And having a large cast over time is something that I find pretty thrilling. It's an advantage that television has and that a series of novels have that I don't think any other art form necessarily is able to do as well.
Absolutely, and I really look forward to hearing more about Leo. As you left at the end of book two, there's lots of stuff that needs to be done, and there's some poignancy as well. So this is a case of something that I think is just gonna keeps echoing and echoing in my head. So you have done well, Grasshopper, as they say.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. One of the things that I do want to mention, if you're listening to this today and you would like to get a signed copy, you better head for vjbooks.com. So they can you have been kind enough to sign copies for them. So they're very happy with that.
Yes, I'm delighted to do so soon.
Yeah. What are you, do you collect yourself?
I don't collect in the sense of collecting a lot of signed books. However, when I was younger, I happily saved up my allowance and collected all of the blue-spined Hardy Boys books that were published in the 70s that were coming out at around that time. And so that was my first kind of introduction to collecting, is the notion that, oh, there are 70 books in this, and I could potentially have and read them all.
Yeah.
You know, so and I was the same for, you know, whatever Ian Fleming or Robert E. Howard Conan novels that happened to be series at the time that I would get. I find myself collecting less now simply because having something and not having time to enjoy it is a real challenge with the family and the day job and the writing job. And others, I'm very cautious about accumulating things that just sit on the shelf.
Yeah.
So most recently, I cleaned out my book collection and kept only those which were books that I was certain I was going to read within the next year, for example. A lot of books by friends from who are authors themselves from mystery conventions that I want to read. A lot of some of the more classic novels along the way. But I got it all down to the size of a small bin, and I should be able to read that within the next year or 2 years. And hopefully I won't accumulate too many more in the time, although that's always a challenge at mystery conventions.
Right, indeed. And one of my favorite sayings lately is, of course you don't have enough shelves for your books. If you did, you wouldn't be worth knowing. So when you go to a convention, and you might mention some that you're coming up with, obviously, you have a good time relating with people. I can tell that you get along very well with folks. What do you get most out of when you go to a convention?
Well, I'm probably in my writing career and my going to the convention started pretty much at the same time. So I'm really only in my third year of going to conventions, and already I'm seeing what I get from them change to a certain extent. Part of it is just as if you're a published author, of course, you're going with a business hat on and you're participating in panels, which are always huge fun, and you're signing books and talking with fans. And that's really the most fun. That's the outstanding part is interacting with folks. But there's also a lot still to be learned, I think, in terms of the craft. Thriller Fest has a couple of days, for example, that are devoted specifically to the craft of writing, and they're more for authors and aspiring authors. And I still find that useful and hope that I always do. I also very much like talking with other authors about the business aspects of what they're doing, about their process, and sharing war stories to a certain extent, because writing is a very lonely job, and getting together with other authors can certainly make you feel part of the community and remind you that you're not alone.
Yeah. And then the gratification is seriously delayed in the feedback, though.
Absolutely.
I think Robert Heinlein said that writing is something you should do alone and wash your hands afterwards. But is there anything about your writing or about the books you'd like to share that I have not asked you about today?
Well, let's see. We haven't talked too much about the push-pull of Van's moral compass.
Let me
mention that just for readers who are new. You know, Van was raised by his grandfather, who is his grandfather's namesake, Donovan. And his grandfather is a career criminal, and always has been. It's the only profession he's had. He is an experienced and careful and very methodical thief. And he raised Van in that life. And so, having grown up around that criminal element, and then having spent his adult life in the military with a very, very different setting on that compass, having a very honor bound and serving the person next to you and serving your country, and making sure that you're looking out for the fellow who's also looking out for you. He is now dealing with the black and the white in his life and learning to deal with the gray is sort of the way I sum up the books. And I mentioned that character arc going into the third book where while Van is not a professional criminal himself, he has those skills, and he doesn't show a lot of compunction on leaning on those skills either when it gets him or his friends out of a jam. And from a moral standpoint, he's had to confront some uncomfortable questions about what it is that he's doing and what he intends to be. The military, if you've been in it, and I'm not a veteran myself, but again, having talked in detail with many friends, the military does everything for you, right? They tell you where to go and what to do and how to act and all the rest of it. And so Van has had a lot of those questions set aside since he was 18. Now he has to reengage with civilian life and make a path for himself. And that's a very challenging thing to do, but also very exciting.
Well, and in the context of an action thriller where there's plenty of action, there's also plenty of thought here. And I think that's what's going to bear repeating, and the fact that people are going to keep coming back and back to your work. I'm looking forward to reading a syllabus from a college class here in about 5 years about deconstructing the work of Glen Eric Hamilton.
I can only hope that graduate papers will be written that I cannot understand about my own work.
That's great. Anything else you want to mention? Because you have been very generous with your time with us today.
No, I don't think so. I'll just encourage folks, if you haven't been to a mystery convention for fans or for authors, have a look. There's some really wonderful ones out there. There's Left Coast Crime here on the Western Coast. There's Malice Domestic for those who like cozies. And my home turf, there's Thriller Fest in New York, which is one of the biggest ones for thrillers, action thrillers, spy thrillers, things of that nature. I encourage folks to take a look at these conventions because they are a tremendously fun time. They can be a little addictive, but they're a lot of fun. And then BoucherCon this year, the biggest, the largest and oldest mystery convention is in New Orleans this year. So that is certainly going to be a party.
Well, we will expect you to be there and be an entertaining part of that party, we suspect.
I hope to be.
All right. Our guest this morning has been Glen Eric Hamilton. His latest is Hard Cold Winter. It is highly recommended. We suggest you go out and check it out immediately. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Roger. I had a great time.
You've been listening to Modern Sign Books on Blog Talk Radio with book specialist Roger Nichols. Be sure to check us out at modernsignbooks.blogspot.com.